What's up, guys? Joe, alcoholic. Good to be here. Thanks for asking me to speak, Marlon. Good excuse to get out of my house. I've been real comfortable staying at home. I'm sure a lot of people can relate. Man, I've just been staying at home, going to my home group on Fridays, and that's it, you know? I had a newcomer reach out to me this week and tell me he wanted to go to meetings. So, like, I've been at a meeting every day this week, which is wild compared to how I've been living, like, the last year. You know, everybody's been locked down and whatnot. I haven't spoken at a podium in probably 2 years or so this is weird, too. Tampa YPG, man, this was like my regular Thursday meeting when I was getting sober, driving from St. Pete out here every Thursday night. There's still a lot of familiar faces from back then, and that's awesome. You know, that's just a testament to, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and good sponsorship and working the steps, man. That's crazy. My sober date is Cinco de Mayo of 2009. I have a sponsor. I sponsor others. I have a home group. It's the St. Pete Beach Young People's Group. We meet Friday nights, 8 o'clock at the Alana Club on St. Pete Beach. Speaker meeting. We get a little rowdy out there. So you guys feel like getting rowdy on a Friday night? Come on through. If not, probably not the meeting for you. I'm from Southern California. Born and raised out there. Not like the good parts of Southern California, not the cool shit that they show on like TV. Like if you saw my neighborhood on TV, it was on an episode of Cops. I mean, I grew up being a little wannabe cholo, chasing around all the homies in the barrio, that's how it was, dude. I come from a single parent home. We were poor, man, super poor. My mom was 16 when she had me. She was a single parent. I was just always trying to fit in with the other kids. I was willing to go to whatever length it was to fit in with the guys in the neighborhood. And I got in a lot of trouble for it. I was a bad kid, man. I was always getting in trouble. And I wasn't like the bad kid, like, always starting trouble with people. I was like a little sneaky guy, like, you know, stealing stuff and like just trying to get away with stuff all the time. And it just led to me getting in a lot of trouble. I was always wanting what all the other kids had at school. You know, I was like, man, like they had all these video games and all this, and they dressed real cool. My mom dressed me real weird. Like I would wear like these matching like turquoise freaking jumpsuit things. Like I don't know where she shopped. It was ridiculous. She cut my hair, dude. I had like a bowl cut, but she just left like a rat tail. So it was like I had a haircut that nobody else had. It was my mom's. Oh my gosh, I blame my mom for everything, man. For years and years, man, it was always her fault. I was always so mad at her. Our relationship growing up was it was not good. I was always mad. I was always upset about something, in my mind, it was always her fault. But you know, the truth is, she worked really hard. She worked at a grocery store, trying to support my badass. Put braces on my teeth, you know, have insurance to send me to rehab when it was time to go to rehab. you know, stuff like that. But, excuse me. So anyway, let's see. First time I drank, I was a child. It was at a wedding. I stole a bottle of champagne. And that was the first time I got blackout drunk. And I remember a little pieces of the night. I remember feeling good. I remember I was dancing. I remember this woman was dancing, and I remember her looking at me and being like, "Hey, you want to dance with me?" And I remember thinking to myself, like, "Yeah, of course she wants to dance with me," you know. And that was the way alcohol made me feel the first time I ever drank. I don't remember anything else about that night, but I remember like just just being a child, but like just this ridiculous amount of confidence and like just feeling so good about myself. I didn't continue to drink regularly, but you know, it started up just a few years later, pretty regular. You know, started off on the weekends. Then it was like, it got to be like every day. By the time I was 15 years old, I was a daily drinker. My mom, I said she worked at a grocery store. She had an apron. She'd leave hanging on the hook. And I'd just dig in the apron. I'd get cash out of her pockets every day. And I'd get somebody to go buy me booze. I was drinking Old English 40 ounces because that's what they drank in the rap videos. And I had a buddy who told me about this stuff called Cisco. And that was like this really fine wine that I would get. Man, that stuff was like, I don't think there was a piece of fruit in that. Yeah, it was like varnish with food coloring. I'd be covered in like red and orange every time I drank it. But like that's what I started doing every day. I stopped going to school completely. And started picking up other habits. I had a pretty regular meth habit. Not gonna really get into that, but you know, that was part of my deal. Got really skinny. Probably weighed about 100 pounds until I was like, I don't know, 20 years old. You know, all this stuff started happening, and my mom, she didn't know what was going on with me. So one day I came home from school, and she told me we're going out to dinner. And I was like, on a Tuesday? All right, you know, that's not something we usually did, like in the middle of the week, but okay. She said we were going to Fridays. I was like, Fridays? On a Tuesday? Hell yeah. And then we pulled up in this parking lot, and I saw this sign, and it said Charter Hospital. It was not Fridays. And I immediately, in my head, I remembered the commercial, and the commercial was like, if you don't get help at Charter, please get help somewhere. And I was like, oh, this is not going to be good. So, like, yeah, man, I had to speak to a therapist, and they kept me for observation. They checked me in on a 5150, I had to stay there for 72 hours, and, like, I felt like if I didn't tell them something, they weren't ever going to let me go home. So I was like, all right, I'll tell them about the way I drink, because I can't get in too much trouble for that. I can't tell them about any of the other stuff I'm doing, but I'll tell them about the way I drink. And, you know, she asked me, you know, how much I drank, and I was like, oh, I just have a couple of Old Englishes every day. Just a couple beers. Apparently that's not normal. So, I mean, she just simply told my mother that, you know, your son's an alcoholic and he needs to go to meetings. So at 15 years old, my mom would drop me off at this coffee shop for AA meetings. She would say, you're going to your AA class. And I'd bring my backpack and I'd have my big book and my 12 and 12 and my notebook for taking notes. And I'd show up to my AA classes. And, you know, I remember walking in that meeting, and this particular meeting was like a serious, like, Southern California, like, biker meeting. And I was like, oh, I am not one of these guys. So I remember looking around the room and, like, you know, they're all like denim everything and chains. And I was just like, apparently not all meetings are like that out there, but this one was. And like, I knew immediately just by looking at these people, there is no way I'm an alcoholic. And you know, so I started leaving early, and you know, I'd walk home, and right when I would get home from the meeting, my mom would be getting ready to leave to go pick me up, and she'd be like, what are you doing here? And I'd be like, oh, class got out early today, Mom. No big deal. And, you know, and nothing changed. You know, that was my first introduction to AA. Wasn't interested in it. Didn't think that alcohol was a problem. What I had come to find out, you know, for me and for my personal experience and story is, you know, when I was doing all these other things in my life, you know, my alcoholism, like, kind of like hid in the shadows, you know what I mean? There was like all these other things that were going on with me that were serious problems, and like there was no denying. And you know, I couldn't like rationalize anything about it, and like my whole life my alcoholism kind of like just took a back seat and hid in the corner, and was like, you know, it was there and I was drinking, but like with all these other things going on in my life, you know, there was no time to ever look at it, never even get to a point where I could even like think for a second that I had a problem with drinking. Even though I drank alcoholically every time I drank, I blacked out almost every time I drank. There was no really good times drinking with me. I never drank normally, ever. So anyway, I'm going to pull this up here so I can see the time. All right. So I got in a lot of trouble as a teenager. I was in and out of correctional facilities, state hospitals, all that kind of stuff. I moved out when I was 18 years old. On my 18th birthday, I moved into my buddy's garage because I had nowhere else to go. And after living in this garage, I don't know, for a month or so, he found his uncle panhandling on the side of the road. And they brought this guy home, and they're like, "Joe, you got a roommate." And he was like, he had like a beard down to the middle of his chest, and like he was just this dirty brown bag and wino. And I was like, I could not believe they wanted me to share my garage with this guy. He was like, no way, this is not gonna work. His name was Leroy, Uncle Leroy. And so Leroy ended up becoming my roommate for the next couple of years in this garage. And we became friends pretty quick. You know, I would go to work. He would go out and he'd panhandle for the day. And at the end of the day, we'd come home and he'd have all these natty ices from him being out panhandling all day. And he'd be like, have some beers. And, you know, I drank with Leroy just about every night. And I remember thinking, like, man, like, this guy has a problem. Like, this is the guy that needs to go to AA. Like, you know, look at him. Like, and you know, and I would just drink my beers with him and just be like, man, you know, if I ever got that bad, maybe. Eventually what happened was, you know, I was paying like, who knows, like $60 a week or something, like $50 a week to stay in this garage. And, you know, booze are expensive, man. I got to the point where I really couldn't afford the rent there. And, I lost my job, cause Leroy was keeping me up all night and feeding me booze. And, and like, you know, I couldn't pay my rent, so they asked me to leave. And I was just thinking, like, Leroy gets to stay, but I have to go? Like, unbelievable. Like, I couldn't wrap my head around this. Like, this guy, okay. I got a job that, I got this job, man. It was my dream job. It was doing merchandising. We were fixing shelves at grocery stores. Really, like, no thought kind of work. But what was so great about this job was they kept me all over the place. I was all over Southern California, Vegas, Arizona, staying in these hotels and fixing up these grocery stores. And, you know, I wouldn't say I was homeless, but, I mean, I don't know. Try to call me or mail me a letter. Good luck. So I'm living in these hotels, and I get a paycheck every week, and I have zero bills and all this money to just spend on booze every week. And it was great at first, you know. And then what happened was, you know, they ended up flying me out here to Florida. Actually, that's how I ended up out here. They had some grocery stores they wanted to fix up out here, and I was like, yeah, of course I'll go to Florida. And didn't really have anything else going on back home, so you know, came to Florida. Met a girl out here. Man, she took me to Ybor City, and we were drinking tequila all night. And and then I blacked out, and I woke up the next day for work, and it was like one of those wake ups, like, oh shit, you gotta go. You know, they're banging on my door. We're trying to leave for work. You know, my coworkers, we have a rental car that we're sharing between, like, you know, like five or six of us. And it was a PT Cruiser. Yeah, remember those? And they're like rushing me to get ready. And like, as I'm getting ready, you know, I'm super hungover, and like, memories from the night before are coming back as I'm getting dressed. And and like, as I'm walking out to the car, I remember all of a sudden I'm like, oh man, I got really sick in the PT Cruiser last night. And and like, they're like, you know, they're getting impatient. They're like, come on, let's go. You know, and I'm like, don't know, I don't want to go, but like, I have to. And it's like, all right, face the music, screw it. You know, I know, like, I had Golden Corral that day, so there was a little bit everything in there. And I was like, all right, you know. And like, they just hopped right in like nothing. And I was just like, what's going on here? I opened the door to peek in, and it's like, it smells like cleaners in there. And I was like, what the hell? This girl that I met while I was passed out drunk in the hotel room, she went through and she cleaned the car from top to bottom. And I fell in love, man. I had never been in love before, but I knew that's exactly what was going on right now. I immediately asked her to move to California with me. She agreed. That was it. You know, she was out in California. Before she was like, we made a plan, and like she was moving in like, I don't know, 2 months was the plan. And I got to the point where like I couldn't get out of, like, they would put me in these hotel rooms like across the street from these grocery stores that I'm working at, and I couldn't even like get out of bed and walk across the street to go to work anymore. You know, my drinking was just getting worse and worse, like it always does. And they fired me. I had nowhere to go, so it was like I went and checked myself into rehab. You know, called the girlfriend. Yeah, I know you're coming, but I'm gonna be in rehab when you get here. She still came. So, that's on her. But, she moved out here, and, they made me do steps while I was at the rehab, so, like, I'm getting another taste of AA while I'm there, and, I really liked being sober this time. Like, I was like, oh, you know, this actually feels pretty good, you know what I mean? I was doing the deal. They told me I had to do a four-step and a fifth-step if I wanted to stay at this rehab, so, like, I did it, and, I was getting relief. I didn't know what I was getting relief from, but I was definitely feeling better. And then she moved out, and I graduated from rehab, and I moved in with her. And shortly after that, she got pregnant, and then life started getting crazy again. I got a sponsor. I started, I was coming up on like a year. And but like once I left rehab, I wasn't doing any of those things anymore. I wasn't doing the steps. I wasn't, they told me get a coffee commitment. I did that, but that's like really all I was doing. I wasn't trying to move forward with any of those amends or anything where I was at, and then like I got a resentment against my sponsor, and so I stopped really going to meetings. And then I got that job back doing the merchandising, and so now they're flying me all over the place again. And one night after working, I'm in the hotel room with one of my coworkers, and they're drinking, and I'm just like, I'm looking at the booze, and I'm like, I could just drink one. Like I was thinking it, but I said it out loud, and I was like, it'd be all right if I drank one. And the guy just looked at me like, yeah, of course you can drink one. What's wrong with you? And he handed me a beer, and I drank it. And while I'm drinking, I'm thinking, all right, this is how it's going to be. I'm going to go out of town every other week, and I'll drink when I'm out of town, and the girlfriend will never know. Nobody's ever going to know that I'm doing this. And by the end of that weekend, I was walking through the door with a case of beer on my arm. Like, yeah, so I drink now. she wasn't happy. She was pretty scared of what life was going to look like. So eventually what happened is I drove her away to Florida. She couldn't handle the way I drank. She couldn't handle me disappearing for days at a time. She couldn't handle that lifestyle, raising a kid by herself. And so she took my kid, and she came back to St. Pete, where she's from. And, so one day I just threw my clothes and my tools in the back of my truck, and I drove out here. At first I thought, like, the change of scenery, the geographical, whatever. But I was pretty certain that I was pretty certain that it was the people and the places in California that was keeping me drunk. And even though they told us 100 times, and everywhere you go, there you are. You can move wherever you want, but you're taking you with you. So, but I was different, of course. And I remember I got a job immediately, you know, when I moved here. And so I'm like, I'm feeling good about myself. I'm crushing it, you know. I'm working. I'm doing all the right things, you know, just feeling super confident about my life and the way things are going right now, even though I'm like, I'm sharing a twin bed in her, like, childhood home with her in her room. Yeah, it was, you know, you have to really be in love to do that. And we had a crib on the other side of the room. You know, so, like, I'm making the money. I'm going to get us a place. I'm going to do all this stuff. I'm going to do everything I'm supposed to do because I'm out of California. I'm away from all those cholos that I hung out with. And, you know, I'm not hanging in the barrio anymore. So things are different. And my coworkers would stop at Circle K on the way home from work every day, and they would get tall boys for the drive home. And every day I would say, no, thank you. I do not drink. You know, feel free to do what you're going to do, but I don't drink. And every day they would stop and they would ask me, you sure? You sure you don't want one? You sure you don't want one? And every day it got harder and harder for me to say no to them until eventually, of course I drank. Of course I drank again. What I've come to find out is that without a program of recovery in my life, I'm going to drink every single time. Doesn't matter if it's, you know, 5 years from now or 2 months from now. If I'm not working some sort of program of recovery in my life, I will drink again. It's not like, for me, it's not like maybe it might happen. Like, nah, it will happen. And shit will get crazy. So anyway, needless to say, ruined that relationship. I had an apartment. It was gross. I couldn't take care of myself. There was bugs. There was broken bottles. There was dirty dishes. Stains all over the couch and the carpet. It was just think of like that flop house that you used to go to, and that was where I lived. And I had this little girl that my ex would drop off at my house once a week, and like she did not like being there, and I was just like pitiful, just sitting on the couch. Like she'd be clinging to her mom's leg, mommy, please don't leave me. And I'd just be like, you know, wanting to cry, because it's like, yeah, I don't really blame you. I wouldn't want to stay here either. What happened was I was drinking one night, and this guy, he was like, he woke up on my floor the next morning, and I was like, that's disgusting. Get off the floor. He was like, I can't drink like this, Joe. My life sucks. I can't get anything done. You know, I was like, oh, I've heard all these things before. You need to go to AA, dude. And I looked at him. I was like, you know what, man? I'm going to get you sober. And I took him to a meeting that night, and he was like, how'd you know where to go to the meeting? And I was like, oh, I drove by one time and I saw the triangle on the window. And he was like, oh, and he was like, but how'd you know what time to come? And I was like, because it's AA, they meet at 8 o'clock, dude. Like, you know? And yeah, sure enough, you know, I went to the place that had the triangle with the circle on the door at 8 o'clock. There was a meeting, and you know, these old guys were talking about their alcoholism, and I was like, holy shit, I'm an alcoholic. It was like, you know, once I finally got to a place in life where like all that stuff that I was talking about earlier that like casted a shadow over my alcoholism, you know, that stuff wasn't really there anymore. And there was no denying like what I was doing. There was no rationalizing the fact that I was an alcoholic anymore. And I got a meeting list, and man, I was like, look, man, we can come to a meeting here every night of the week, dude. And he was like, every night? I was thinking maybe we'd come back next week. And like right there, I knew, I was like, okay, this is going to be a solo adventure for me from here on out, you know, because I've been to rehab enough times to know that, like, you know, you got to really do this thing. And, you know, I got a sponsor. Early sobriety for me was very uncomfortable. You know, I don't know how to talk to people without booze. I don't know how to be around people. I get super riddled with anxiety. I don't think I even spoke two words to most people my first couple years of sobriety. I was very, yeah, Nikki remembers. I was very, very quiet. I was scared. I was scared of everything. And when I'm scared, I like try to look real tough all the time, like get you away from me, because I'm terrified that you're gonna talk to me. Like, what's the worst that's gonna happen? You're gonna talk to me and I'm gonna have to talk back, and that just sounds like the worst thing that could ever happen. It took me years to get over that. I'm somebody who went through the steps. It took me a couple years to get through the steps. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. I got them done and I'm still here. I got super involved in service work, general service, treatment committee, all that stuff, everything. Everything AA had, I did it. When I got sober, like, all the people around my age were like going back to school and, you know, taking on all these cool new adventures, and like, you know, I'd been working in the same trade since I was in high school, and I didn't really have that next step. I felt like different, like I'm supposed to go to school. Well, they're going to school. Like, no, I don't want to do that. What I found was, like, there was a lot of stuff that kept me busy in AA through that period of time, and I'm so grateful, because, like, I got to a point at 2 years sober that, like, I just didn't know what to do with myself. Like, if I had to live the monotony of AA for the rest of my life, I don't know if I'm going to stay sober. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. But then, like, some kids from Tampa got me to come out to this young people's meeting, and they got me involved in this young people stuff and these conferences, and then, like, you know, I had all this stuff to do, and my life was very full from that. I got to a point where I didn't want to do that anymore, and today I still have a home group. I still take meetings to the treatment center. I still sponsor guys. Through the pandemic, I know it was a rough year for everybody, but I started a business and it's been very successful. So it wasn't that rough for me, but except for like the spiritual toll of not going to AA and then like having to show up and being a grumpy old man about it. That was tough, but like, you know, I can get through that kind of stuff. My daughter, she's in high school. It's crazy because I used to bring my daughter with me everywhere. I'm going to wrap it up right now. She's amazing. She lives with her dad full time now. I started my business. I'm a business owner now, and my life is full, and it's all because of AA teaching me how to live. That's all I got. Thank you, guys.